Good day, everyone. Welcome to Roots Reggae Reasoning Sessions. And I'm one of your hosts, Roski Mascani, and we have two other hosts. We've got Mashariki Ramey, and we have Jinjay Dennis, two wonderful ladies who are doing an excellent job with making this happen for us, really. We're having a great time doing this podcast series. And on the panel this evening, we have Margell, the Minister of Information. We have Miss Liz, and
Hello.
We have our guest. I'm not gonna introduce the guest because I'm gonna let Mashariki do that. So I'm turning it over to Mashariki, and I'm ready to have a great time. Mashariki, take it over.
Greetings, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us on this wonderful conversation with another one of our Southern California reggae legends. His name is Stevie Tiger Tone Berhalt. We don't know that last name, but I'm going to say it anyway. He's been a reggae guitarist, and he's performed with numerous legendary artists and bands like Gregory Isaacs, Barrington Levy, Marcia Griffiths, Sean Paul, and numerous others here and abroad. So today we have the pleasure of having him share with us his wonderful experiences over the numerous years of who he's played with and the music that he's created and participated in. And we're so grateful to have you here, Stevie. Give us a little bit about your history. How about, you know, when did you first start and how did you fall in love with reggae music?
Okay, well, I'm honored to be here. I appreciate you having me. And I guess I would start by saying, I'll try not to, you know, I'll try and keep it concise, but what was happening with me was I was a young guitar player. I was living in Dallas, Texas. And for about 2 or 3 years, when I was about 18, 19, something like that, and I felt I was searching for something musically. Before that, I should go back a little further. When I was, my mom saw an ad in the newspaper for the Neville Brothers from New Orleans, and she had never heard of them, but she thought, wow, this looks really interesting, and she went to the show, and I was 15 years old, so I didn't go, but the next morning I woke up, and there were Neville Brothers all over the house, sleeping on the floor, the couch, the chairs. And, you know, everybody woke up and started talking and hanging out. And my guitar was just right there. And I'm playing guitar and we're talking. And at one point, you know, they were saying, oh, bro, you sound good. You need to quit school and get out there and start gigging. And my mom is like, don't tell him that, you know, don't tell him to quit school. Oh, my God. And I really connected with Cyril. So that was Cyril, Aaron, Art, and Charles. It was all four of the Neville Brothers back then. And of course, then I went and saw them the next night. They had like a 5-night engagement at a club called the Bijou in Dallas, Texas. And so I really hit it off with Cyril, and I was telling him, yeah, I'm trying to write songs and stuff. And he goes, well, where's your notebook? And I was like, well, I don't have a notebook. He goes, well, then you're not a songwriter. And he was telling me, so he pulls out his notebook and he's showing me his songs. And then he started showing me his method for writing songs. And that has stayed with me my entire life. I still resort to that method. And so, you know, then I didn't end up quitting school just yet. but then I did start it, you know, playing music, and I kind of was telling myself, well, I don't really want to go down that road of being a musician, blah, blah, blah. My brother-in-law was killed by a drunk driver. He was a Berkeley graduate and a musician, and he was actually killed the same night that his wife, my sister, gave birth to their first son. And it was very traumatic, so I was like, I don't know if I want to be a musician. His amplifier hit him in the back of the head. He was in a little VW, and so he died, and that was traumatic. But then at a certain point, I decided this is what I'm supposed to do, and I you know, I'm learning guitar and trying to get better. And at a certain point, I start realizing that I'm searching for something. I wasn't satisfied. Disco was really big right then, and I loved disco. I loved Donna Summer and stuff, and Barry White, and you know, I love all those artists. But I always felt like there was something out there for me, and I didn't know what it was, which makes my story somewhat mystical. So to make a long story a little shorter, a friend of mine went to Austin, Texas for the weekend, and we had to go back to Dallas on Sunday, and we were walking down the sidewalk on 6th Street, Austin, Texas, which is like the Strip, and we passed a record store, and there was a poster of Bob Marley in the window of the record store. And as soon as I saw that poster, all the hair on my neck stood up and I got chills, and I pointed at the poster and I said, "That's it. I know that's what I've been looking for." And I had heard Stevie Wonder's Boogie on Reggae Woman, didn't know what reggae was. I, at that time, I was thinking, well, maybe that's some kind of disco music from Mexico, right? That's what I told myself. And I had no idea that it was Jamaican. So the next day I got in my car and after work, and I went to the record store, and his album Kaya had just been released. And I bought Kaya, and I took the record home and dropped the needle on the first song, which was Easy Skankin'. And within 10 seconds, I was like, oh my gosh, this is what I've been looking for. And so it was very mystical how that happened. At least in my mind, it was really mystical, because I had been searching for 3 years, knowing there was something out there, but didn't know what it was. And when I saw Bob Marley's picture, I just knew that was what I was looking for. And sure enough, it was. And at that moment, I started learning the guitar parts. And I told myself, I'm never going to know this music unless I learn the keyboard parts, Stevie, and the bass lines and the drum beats. Yes, sir.
I have to interrupt you. This is very important. Do you know that I think it's a larger percentage of people who encountered Bob Marley and it kind of changed their whole trajectory? Because, you know, we didn't listen to Lester Farai. Now we're listening to you, and it's a Bob Marley story.
Okay.
And back in 1983, I had the same epiphany, but mine wasn't being a musician. It's just a super reggae fan.
Spiritual movement, yeah.
Yeah, and it just took over my person. I listened to the summer of 83. I listened to his last recording, the summer of 83. The whole summer. And I mean, I couldn't just, it's phenomenal how this one individual can just change so many lives. But okay, get back to it.
I appreciate that, because that's exactly what happened to me. And Lester Farah is a dear brethren of mine. And so it doesn't surprise me to hear this, you know? And so it did change my whole trajectory of life. And I was in it at that point, and learning all the instruments. So I wasn't just focusing on the guitar. I was focusing on all of it. And the summer of 81, a friend of mine and I went to Jamaica to Reggae Sunsplash all four nights, Jarrett Park. And that was a big year. That was a great year, because everybody was there except for Bob had just died May 11th. And that Reggae Sunsplash was at the end of July. I think it was July 30th through August 3rd. July 31st through August 3rd, I believe. And I went, saw all four nights, and went off in the ghetto and met a brethren named Prince Brown. And they're playing bingy drums and smoking herb. And at Prince Brown's house, he was a potter. And he made pots out of clay, and he made kutchies for the chalice. And there was a little girl playing the bass drum in his house, you know, and chickens were walking around in the house. And, right, Jamaica, this is Mo Bay, but it's, you know, and, you know, we really got into that roots element of the music. And this is a good time for me to just mention, I've always, because I'm a white guy and I'm not Jamaican, I've even to this day, I consider myself a guest of reggae music or a guest in reggae music. I've never been cocky about it. And I've always had utmost respect for the culture and the struggle of the people in Jamaica that I met when I went there. And so, you know, Prince Brown was really interesting because that was Nyabingi, which is the heartbeat of this music. And like I said, there was a little 7 or 8 year old girl playing the bass drum, and Prince Brown was playing the repeater drum. And my friend, I met a guy named Sparky, who took us to Prince Brown's house, and everybody's singing, "They give I basket to carry water. They give I basket to carry water. Home Rastafari, home Sila," right? And we're all singing this stuff, and you know, yeah, it's life changing. And I went back to Dallas, formed a reggae band, and Dallas is not so, that's a great place to be playing reggae because, you know,
okay, it's
right? And yeah, I did gigs. I had my band playing Dallas, Houston, Austin, Shreveport, Fayetteville, wow, Arkansas, you know, all over that. And after about 2.5 years of that, and you know, hired a guy to play keyboards. He was from Trinidad, and we had a Jamaican brethren on percussion, Robert Barnes, and the keyboard player's name was Abiaya. And so after doing that for about 2.5 years, I realized Dallas was not for me, and I moved to Los Angeles in the summer of 83, the same time that he was just telling me that he discovered Bob Marley.
Stevie, I have a question.
Yes.
When you went to Sunsplash in 81, was it in Montego Bay at Jarrett Park?
Yes, yes.
Oh, that's what it was. Did the Wailing Souls perform?
I don't think so, no.
Okay.
But, you know, Heptones, Mighty Diamonds, Barrington Levy, I think Gregory was there. Peter Tosh wasn't there. Bob Marley had just died. No, I don't think Bunny Wailer was there. But there were so many great artists. And I believe that was the first year that Steel Pulse had played Jamaica. And they played on the first night. And the crowd went wild because they started their set with Ku Klux Klan, that song of theirs, Ku Klux Klan. And there was these like blue lights. And David Hines had on a Ku Klux Klan hat, and all you could see was the silhouette in this blue light, and the lights got brighter and brighter, and then that was Grizzly on drums, and they went into Ku Klux Klan and they did their set, and Jamaican people went wild, and it was the first time at that point in Sunsplash history that a band got asked to play twice the same year, because they again came back on the third night and performed.
Wow.
So it was a really crazy reggae sunsplash. It was really amazing. And I got to see so many artists. And when I was in Dallas, I didn't know anybody. You know, I bought Bob Marley's Kaya and I listened to it over and over. And then I found a little punk/record store. Back then, reggae and punk were kind of had a little relationship. And there was this guy had a little tiny little record store, is not much bigger than a phone booth, to be honest with you. And he had just a bin of like just two little stacks of reggae like this. And I didn't know who anybody was. There was no reggae radio in Dallas or anything. And so every week when I got my check, I'd go buy 2 or 3 albums, and I would choose these albums based on the cover. If I liked the cover, I just bought the album. I mean, I had no idea who anybody was. One of those albums was Funky Kingston by Toots and the Maytals with that beautiful artwork.
Whoa.
And, you know, Gregory Isaacs' Extra Classic album. And, you know, and I fell in love with Big Youth and Gregory Isaacs. Those were, and Burning Spear. Those four were probably my favorite artists when I first got into reggae. And, you know, every week I'm buying records, and I used to call it shot in the dark reggae because I never knew what I was going to buy. I never knew if I was going to like it or not. you know, and most of it I liked, but not all of it. And so, you know, that was my introduction to reggae, and I bought, I don't know, 80 or 100 albums before it was done. Moved to Los Angeles, as I said, and as I was about to say, this is a good time to say that me as a white guy playing reggae, oh, I got to backtrack. I'm sorry, because this is really important, if anything is. So after 2 years of playing reggae in Dallas, I started realizing, I started becoming self-conscious. And I started saying, wait a minute. As I learned about the culture, and back then reggae was dominated by Rastafari, Rastafari is rooted in repatriation. I'm saying to myself, you're white, bro. You ain't repatriating nowhere. You know what I'm saying? And so, I made this decision to stop playing reggae because I didn't want to be that guy that was going to water down the music. There was no such word as cultural appropriation back then, but I still felt like I didn't want to detract from reggae. And so I said I was going to quit, and I started telling other musicians and stuff that I was going to quit. I don't know if you guys are still there. I lost the visual, but oh, there you are. So there was a good friend of mine named Clive who was a Jamaican guy. There was a band that used to come play in Houston, all Jamaicans, called Yard Band. And Clive was their keyboard player. And I went to Clive and said, Clive, I'm going to quit playing reggae. I don't want to be this white guy watering down the music. And he said, no, Bridger, no. He goes, when I have to go back to Jamaica, he goes, it does my heart good to know that you are over here exposing people to the music. And he said, you know, music is the universal language. It doesn't matter what color you are. He goes, you were chosen to do this.
Okay.
And that now I'm in a dilemma. I'm like, oh boy, now what am I going to do? I had decided to quit. I went to a singer named Melody Beecher, a Jamaican singer who she lived in Houston. And I went to her and I told her the same thing. Melody, I'm going to quit. And she said the same thing. No, Stevie, you were chosen to do this. You. It's not going to be easy for you, but you're going to have to do this. And God has chosen you to do this. A little choked up. And so,
take your time.
So I decided, okay, I must continue. And then that's when I moved to Los Angeles. And this is the time I want to say how welcome Jamaicans welcomed me to this music. One of the first artists I backed was Carlton Livingston, 100 pound of Cali weed coming from St. Anne. And I did many shows with him in Los Angeles. And he was so kind to me and so welcoming. And I got to mention Al Campbell because he was the same thing, welcoming. And all of the brethren in Los Angeles were welcoming to me. You know, very little resistance. There was some, but it's not worth mentioning. I had seen Idrin. When I came to Los Angeles for a visit before I moved, and I saw Idrin, and they were amazing. And I was like, oh my God, this band. And the first person I met when I actually moved and was sleeping on somebody's couch up on Wilton and Melrose was Prince Ital Joe. Met him at a club, and he goes, Steve, and no say he has a wicked guitarist, Steve. That's my Ital Joe impression. And he says, you going to play guitar for me? I said, Joe, you never heard me play guitar. He goes, no say ya wicked guitarist. And so I started playing guitar for Ital Joe. And he calls me up one day and he goes, I had told him how much I loved Idrin when I saw them, which was Jati, Basie, and Tony Gibbs. I don't remember the drummer's name. They had a female keyboard player in it. For the life of me, I can't remember her name. But anyway, he goes, they're playing at the Lighthouse. And we went to the Lighthouse. And when I got there, Idrin had changed. Ross Bunny had was there when I first saw them. Idrin had changed. And it was only Tony Gitz, Basie, and a new drummer named Kenyatta. And it was just the three of them, and they had no keyboardist. So I'm like, what is going on here? And but they were still amazing because Tony Gitz was an amazing songwriter. Now they had Kenyatta, who was, I didn't know what a great songwriter he was yet, but he had this amazing singing voice. And so on their break, I said, you know, I'm not really a keyboard player, but I could bang out some chords. And they said, and there was a Yamaha grand piano back then at the Lighthouse. I hope I'm not boring you guys. Anyway, so I sat in with them that day and I joined them. What was interesting about that, I hope you guys are still there. I lost your video again.
Yes,
was interesting about that was in the first week I moved to Los Angeles, don't ask me how this happened, but I had about six offers for reggae bands. I don't remember how that happened, but I remember there was like six bands. One of them was Black Sheep with Jelani and Ishmael. They were doing well. They were touring. They were out of D.C., I think, at the time. And then Rebel Rockers was an interracial reggae band. And the bass player was a guy named Red Locks. He rest in peace. He passed away. And he's like, yo, brethren, you know, join Rebel Rockers and you can live in this house in Laguna and you have your own bedroom and all the weed you could possibly smoke. And we're going to pay you $2,000 a week in 1983. That was a lot of money. And there was like four other band offers. And I'm not sure. I don't remember who they were. But and of course, all I could think was, is I belong in Idrin. And they were a mess. There was just three of them. And one of them had gone to jail. Not the one of the three, but somebody else had gone to jail. I don't know what happened to Jati, their lead singer, but I joined Idrin. I turned down the $2,000 a week and all the weed I could smoke, and I joined Idrin. And, you know, I played keyboards for Idrin for 2.5 years until I finally said, I'm done playing these keyboards. I want to play guitar. As when we hired a brethren named Milton Smith, and he came in and finally relieved me of the keyboards. And I loved that group. We sang, you know, we sang four-part harmony and we didn't do copy. We didn't do any Bob Marley songs. We did only Idrin songs, only songs he wrote. Kenyatta was, I got to say about Kenyatta, and I'm going to, Kenyatta just passed away. And he was my brother. But I got to share with you, he had a song about South Africa. Back then, apartheid was still in effect. And he had a song called Natty Life. And, you know, he was saying, living in the ghetto in Soweto. And the chorus said, Natty life is a serious life. Ooh, oh, oh, oh. Natty life is an upful life. I'm telling you, Dred, Natty life is a serious life. Ooh, oh, oh, oh. Natty life is an upful life. And I would sometimes turn around while we were playing that song. I'm sorry. Kenyatta would have tears streaming down his face while he was singing that song. So reggae music for me was never a little folly music or a little joke music. This music was a powerful movement. And when I was a little kid, James Brown said, say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. And when I was a little kid, I thought that was something for everyone to be proud of, you know? And so James Brown was my hero when I was little. And I loved the Beatles and, you know, I loved a lot of groups. But anyway, James was really important to me because he made me feel like music could tear down the walls of racism and bring people together. That's what James Brown did for me. And so you know, reggae music was, it just became my life. And from there, you know, I just started backing artists and it just took off. You know, it just took off. And I'll name a few, you know, back in those early days, I was backing Tristan Palmer, Robert Trench, Little John, Philip Frazier, all these great singers. There were so many, you know, there were so many great singers, and I loved all the vocal trios from Jamaica, and I was so lucky I got to back some of them too, like the Heptones. I backed Leroy Sibbles many times. I worked with all three of the Heptones. We did a West Coast tour with all three of them. That would be Earl Morgan and Barry Llewellyn and Leroy Sibbles. And, you know, I love the Gladiators and I love the Mighty Diamonds and the Abyssinians and you know, the Melodians and all those reggae trios. Israel Vibration, I ended up getting to back them one time when it was the three of them, Apple, Gabriel, and Skelly and Wiz, right? And so I was just blessed, and my life has been so blessed to work with these great artists. I don't know if anybody has a question or if I should shut up or what, but yeah, somebody say something. I don't know.
Stevie, when Stevie was talking earlier about going
I think I lost y'all. I don't hear you anymore. I'm sorry.
We can hear you, though. We can hear
you.
I hear you saying we can hear you, so... But I can't hear you. That's a drag that I can't hear you. What should I do? Log out or just keep going or...
Rush the key?
Huh? Well, you can, but I want to say just a few things.
Oh, man, I cannot hear.
Okay.
I can't hear.
I can't hear enough. Come back in.
So, huh?
Log out and log back in.
Oh, log out?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
So folks, I wish he could hear me, but there's a thing about the concept of race that a lot of people, I don't know if they really think about it, but it's really a strategic construct, race is. And what happens is if you put any two humans together, no matter what race they are, they can procreate if both of them are healthy. So this speaks to the thing about what is this color thing? I know it has a lot to do with genetic makeup and all of that. And, you know, melanin has something to do with it. There's science behind it.
Oh, that's
but, see, the thing about it is there's a spiritual highness that all people that can relate to it. And Stevie brings up some really good points. Because of race, and this is just me analyzing what he's saying, because of race, he thought that he was doing a disservice when in essence he wasn't. So these things, these type of points, because people validated like, no, man, stay in reggae. So there's a higher way of being, and I just wanted to say that because I come out of a Black Studies department. Jinje does, Masariki do, but we still have there's a higher way of being and thinking. And I think that's where we have to start tying up some of these concepts and bridges that we have. And you know, that keeps us separated too also. But also I want to say this, and I said it when we first started doing these programs, Roots reggae music is a world power. It is. All you got to do is look at these concerts. Look at what Bob Marley did. Mm-hmm. Nowhere you can go probably on the earth that you can't see Bob Marley.
Absolutely.
He's probably the most prolific person on the earth in the last couple of centuries. So we really have to start thinking about living on a higher plane of thought process. because we are dealing with lower level thinking and lower level way of being. That's right. I just wanted to say that.
I appreciate you, sir. I appreciate you. So I don't know. There's so much in my history of 46, 47 years in this music. I'll try and go over a couple things. You know, my first Bob Marley day, it was either the second or the third one. Henry Thomas put it on. It was at Jackie Robinson Stadium over across from the jungle on Rodeo Road. Some people know it as Rodeo. We called it Rodeo. And that was with Idrin. We performed there for Henry Thomas. And then he passed away tragically. And Barbara Barabino took it over. And I believe after that, I remember it going to the Culver City War Memorial Auditorium for, I think, only 1 year. And I backed several artists on that. And then it went to Santa Monica. And I know I backed Leroy Sibbles, I think, on that show, and Michael Rose. And there was two other artists. There's only four artists on that show. And then it moved to Long Beach. And I did Bob Marley Day at least 20 times, at least 20 years of it. I was there first with a band called Back in Service. I lost y'all's video again, but I guess you can hear me. I hope you can hear me. Where'd you go?
We can hear you.
Oh, okay, great.
It's an internet thing, so it may be where you're at. Your connection is unstable because we are all here and we can hear you.
Okay, so I after Idrin ended up breaking up, I guess, or something. I don't even remember. I have no recollection of what happened with that. But I just continued with the music. And I ended up, I was just a freelance guitar player backing up many artists. And this is around the time I met the Wailing Souls. And I did, I don't even know. I know I did at least 14 years with the Wailing Souls way before they had their record deal, during their record deal, and after. And I have them to thank. We did a tour in 1999, which was basically Back in Service, which was Fabian Cook, Santa Davis, Michael Hyde, and myself. And two background singers was Ina and Lynette. And I have them to thank because we were opening for Bob Dylan and Carlos Santana for about 5 weeks on the road. And Carlos Santana was one of my guitar heroes, idols, whatever you want to call him. And Carlos invited us out on his show like five nights in a row. And there's a picture on my Instagram that a friend of mine snapped with a Polaroid, and of me trading solos with Carlos Santana. And I have Bread and Pipe to thank for that, of the Wailing Souls. And I am honored that they had me as their guitar player for so long. I backed Eco Mouse for another more than a decade, I'll just say that as well. And so Back in Service was an amazing group. Michael Hyde, amazing keyboard. We all know Santa Davis and his credentials, amazing drummer. Fabian Cook, amazing bass player, drummer, producer, singer. I mean, he does everything. Fixes my computer. Anyway, and so I was in that band. We backed many artists, Alton Ellis, George Nooks, what's his name? Everton Blender, just so many artists with them. And then Back in Service sort of ran its course. And I found I had done an album, Fabian. I've been playing on all of Fabian's recordings since the early 2000s or maybe late 90s. I've been honored for him to use me as on guitar for everything. Mm-hmm. And I lost my train of thought for a second.
Hey, Stevie.
Yes, sir.
Let me interject again real quick.
Yeah, do it.
Back in probably 84,
mm-hmm.
I was riding from San Diego back to L.A., visiting UC San Diego. I was at UC San Diego visiting my first kid's mother. And we were just, you know, about 19 years old. And I saw Fabian Oral Cook on the bus. And it was amazing. We started talking. You know, of course, he wasn't, you know, wasn't popular back then. You know, if you're in the reggae world, you know Fabian Oral Cook.
Well, he was in New York. He was in New York, but continue.
Yeah, and so we talked a good while that bus ride. And throughout the years, I would run into him. I ran into him a few times. And I would remind him, remember we took that bus ride together? And he said he remembered, but yeah, I had the pleasure of spending some time with him on a bus ride back in 1984.
Super talent.
All right.
and one thing I will mention about Fabian, due to my relationship with Fabian, I was asked to play. I remember my train of thought. He asked me to come play on somebody's album, and it turned out to be a group called Detour Posse. So I played on their album, and I wasn't in their band. I just did the album. He wanted me to play on the album, and I did the album. And then I don't know how much later after that, a year or something, they ended up asking me to join them. And it kind of happened through Barrington Levy, because my first show with Barrington was with Santa and Fabian at Dominguez Hills Velodrome in 1988. And I was backstage at Bob Marley Day, and Barrington saw me and he goes, "Oh, it's you. I want you to sit in with me." And I sat in, and he was like, I want him there. And he hired Detour as his full-time band, who I've now been with for 26 years. The interesting thing about Barrington Levy, I got to share another mystical thing. They say your consciousness creates reality, and it certainly does. My girlfriend is on the line, and Lizzie will know that, you know, it is so. It is so, right, Liz? So, so when I still lived in Dallas, I'm listening to these records. I really love Barrington Levy as well, and I knew he was young. He's actually 3.5 years younger than I am. And one day we were rehearsing with some guys, and I remember saying the words. I said, you know, if I could ever just end up playing guitar for Barrington Levy, I would just be satisfied in life. Well, I've now been with Barrington Levy for 26 years. It's crazy how things happen. But back to Fabian.
I think it was 2018 when you were in Jamaica with Barrington that we did Buck Up in Jamaica. That,
yeah. Okay.
Was it 2018 or 2017, something like that?
I don't know.
It was for Rebel Salute.
Yes, I remember that, the mud. Everybody's walking around with paper, plastic bags on their shoes because it was just a field of mud. That was the year, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Oh, definitely.
Yeah, that was crazy. We had a great show that year, though. I remember that show as being great. So there's a couple of key things I would really like to mention because they mean so much to me. So, Fabian, again, you know. Calls me still to this day for everything, which I am honored for. And he called me to, he said, yeah, he had a deal with Disney. And he said, Disney wants to do a Lion King album that they called Rhythm of the Pride Lands that they wanted to aim at basically Black children, right? And so Fabian's asked me to come play on the song Hakuna Matata. And Disney wanted Maxi Priest to sing on it, but Fabian thought Jimmy Cliff was a better fit for the song as a producer. And so they called Jimmy Cliff and he agreed to do it. And the funny thing about, and I did play on that song for that album, which was great. And the funny thing about that was Fabian had to bring a demo to Disney and let them hear what he was doing in order for them to give him the green light to proceed. And I was on that demo and they said, yeah, fine, it's great, proceed. And then they had put a, one of their producers, I will say, to kind of look over Fabian's shoulder. And this guy was like, who played that guitar? And he's like, oh, that's my friend Stevie. And he's like, well, who is he? You know, and he's a reggae guitar player. He plays with all these people. And they were like, well, nobody's ever heard of him. So they got Paul Jackson to come in the studio to do the guitar and to take me off of the recording, right? This is this Disney producer, because they wanted somebody well known. Paul Jackson played with Whitney Houston, and he was on the Tonight Show band maybe it was Jay Leno, I don't know. So Paul Jackson comes to the studio, and I was actually in the studio, and Fabian said, don't tell anybody you're the guitar player. And Paul Jackson says, what's wrong with the guitar? It sounds fine. And they know, we want you to do it, because he was well known. And they let him hear my guitar playing, and he started playing the same thing I had played, you know, bit by bit throughout the song. And I was like, what is this? He shouldn't get to hear what I played. He should play his own thing. Anyway, they brought it back to Disney and played it for Disney. And Disney looks at Fabian, the big wigs at Disney, and said, what happened to the magic? Fabian says, what do you mean? And they said, well, when you brought the demo, it had magic. You know, Disney and magic are, you know, kind of synonymous. And they said, what happened to the magic? What did you change? And he said, well, we recut the guitar and I changed the hi-hat pattern. That's it. And they looked at Fabian and said, bring back that guitar. So they brought back my guitar play, and then they ended up using pieces of me and Paul Jackson throughout the song. And they didn't want to give me credit. And Fabian's manager fought for me to get credit, and I did. So now I've lost y'all video again.
Lost it for it.
Oh, anyway, there you go. So that was a great experience for me, because not only was I performing on a song that Jimmy Cliff sang for Walt Disney, offshoot of The Lion King, but I must have had some magic, because when he took me off, they were like, what happened to the magic? And so that tickled me, you know, that they had to bring me back.
Of course.
So that was an awesome experience for me to do that too.
I have a question. I know, you know, you mentioned Barbara and Henry, and I know you probably worked with a lot of different reggae DJs that were here. Did you ever have to work with Miss Wirewaist?
Oh, yes, I did work with Miss Wirewaist. I loved Miss Wirewaist. She was a lot of fun. She hired me for many things. One of my only negative experiences in reggae, where I was told to go home because I was white, and I'm not mentioning that artist's name, but I actually was told to go home, and I did. But Miss Wirewaist had handpicked that band, and I was one of the players. And then later on in my, I guess you call it career, I ended up back in that same artist again. He did not remember me, and we hit it off just fine and came full circle. So that was a beautiful thing. So, that was a great thing. And I want to touch on Cyril Neville, because we became good friends, and I was probably still living in Dallas, and I called up Cyril one day, and I'm like, man, I'm listening to this reggae music from Jamaica, and it's amazing, and all this stuff. And he's like, yo, bro, make me a cassette. And I made him a 90-minute cassette or two, and, you know, every song was a different artist, how we made cassettes back then. And I sent it to Cyril, and Cyril will tell you to this day that it was me who exposed him to reggae. And then he went on to write song, you know, Africa, and that's my blood down there and all this stuff. And I'm not taking credit for his wonderful songwriting. But I was the one that really exposed him to reggae, and he fell in love with it. And I've since produced songs with Santa Davis and Fully Forward and Tony Chin for Cyril. And so that was also a great honor, you know. So
may I ask a question?
Yes.
Tell the people who you are playing with tonight.
I am playing with a dear friend of mine named Ginger Roots, whose music I love, whose singing I love. He is a great artist in his own right. For some reason, he's not being embraced by the Cali reggae scene. He's never on any of the festivals, which I'm not happy about, but I am at Makeda's World Beat Center in San Diego as we speak. And I'm going to be back in Ginger Roots. You might hear them in the background doing sound check, or I hope they didn't start the show. They're doing sound check. And Santa's on drums, Fully Forward is on bass. I'm playing guitar. Michael Hyde is playing keyboards. An amazing band, and he's an amazing artist with amazing songs. He does not do cover songs. He does his own music, which I respect. And we are going to have a great show tonight, opening for the great Luciano.
Hey, Stevie, Stevie.
Yeah.
Is it possible you could take us on a little a viewing?
Oh, I think I lost your video again.
Are you able to take us to?
Oh my goodness. Hold on. I guess I got to log out again. I'm so sorry.
This is
crazy.
Okay.
Yeah, that it'll be nice to kind of see those guys setting up and all of that. What you think if he could walk in there and just show us a picture of that?
Hello, everybody.
Hey, Lady B.
Uh-oh.
You're on mute.
Okay. Hello, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can hear you, but we can't see you now.
Oh, look, okay, your microphone is unmuted. Okay.
There's your beautiful face.
So no, we can't hear, but we can see her.
We can't hear you.
Hello?
There you go.
Oh, there we go. Yes. Hey, hello, everybody. Bless and love. Greetings
good to
see
everybody.
You. Thank you for inviting me.
Okay, we're back. And you know, I have a pretty strong signal. I just looked at my signal. I got 3 out of 4 bars, so I don't know if it's my phone or not.
It's okay. We're going to take it how we can get it, Brother Steve. Look, Stevie.
Yes, sir.
Is it possible for you to walk in there and so we can kind of see around what's going on?
Yeah, it's funny because what happened was is I have a little one of those little ring lights, and it has a phone holder, and as I was setting it up, the phone holder broke, and so Ginger Roots came back here to help me, and he taped it on my stand. So, okay.
I just want to see what's going on.
We got to go out there and watch and check out their sound check right now. Check it out.
Yeah,
well, let me flip my camera.
Tell Makeda Rasekisa.
Oh, all right, here we go.
Uh-oh, there's World Beat Center. Excellent venue. I love being there.
Oh, this is beautiful.
It's a beautiful venue.
Yeah, look at that.
Wow, they got so much going on there.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, Ginger. He points at the camera.
At the horn player. There go Fully.
It's Fully.
Hey, Fully. And Santa. Hey, Santa. That's excellent. That's excellent.
Michael. That's who we saw the other night that I thought was Norman.
Yeah, that's right. That's...
Excellent, Stevie. Where's Makeda?
Makeda's probably in her office.
Yeah, I would have been there tonight, but things happen.
Yeah, that would have been a good drive.
Yeah, it'd been
Yeah, but
nice
I
to
have to
see
go to work tomorrow.
Luciano
I
too.
can't manage.
No, you will.
Yeah,
Nice.
I was there about what about a month ago
Boom.
at
Boom.
the
Wicked Stevie. Wicked, wicked. We
Hi,
love
Stevie.
it.
Representing Johnny Black right there.
Johnny.
Yes. Where am I? Oh, I passed the door. Okay. Yeah, so again, it's like I'm living the dream because I should mention my relationship with Santa Davis right now because Santa and I have been working together since about the late 90s. Yes. And when I used to live in Venice Beach for 43 years, 39 years in the same apartment. And Santa used to come over every single day and we would record songs and write songs. And we made a couple instrumental albums that were amazing and we never released them. I was writing a lot back then and we recorded over 100 songs back then together. Most of which did not get released, I'm sorry to say. And then since then we have been like brothers. We are brothers. And he's put out about three or four of his own albums. And I'm on almost every song. And whenever I need drums, he plays drums, or we just have a relationship where I play for him and he plays for me. There's no exchange of money, none of that stuff. And I mean, how amazing is that to have a relationship like that with Santa Davis, the legendary
The
Santa
legendary.
Davis, who played on Bob's albums, and Fully Forward. I play with Fully all the time. Fully, I did an album called Humanity, which I did release. Fully played on about 11 of the songs on that album, something like that. And Santa played drums on about half of it. I played drums on the other half. But, I got to pinch myself that these guys call me to play. This is who they choose for guitar 90% of the time, and along with Tony. I mean, don't get me wrong, Tony is one of my college professors in a way, because when I was learning reggae and studying reggae, it was Tony Chin I was studying, the great, Bingy Bunny from the Roots Radics. One of my favorite all-time rhythm guitar players in reggae music was Bob Marley. And people don't talk about what a great rhythm guitar player he is, was. And he was one of my, he's one of my all-time favorite. I think my favorite reggae guitar player was Lynn Tate. He was actually Trinidadian, but he recorded in Jamaica, especially in the Rocksteady days. I love Lynn Tate's solos. They're second to none. Of course, the great Ernest Ranglin. But Tony Chin was one of the people I studied for me to be able to sit here and talk to you today. So I owe a great gratitude to Tony Chin as well. And Santa and Fully, all of them, you know.
We just did a podcast with Tony Chen.
I heard. Yeah, amazing. Tony's got stories. And now I got to mention Ross Michael.
Yes, Pastor Michael.
Because I've been friends, brethren's family. I'm going to get choked up again. Shit. With Ross Michael for since about 80, 1985, I
Wow.
was with Tony Gitz and we're driving somewhere in Venice. And Tony Gitz goes, "Hey, that looked like Ross Michael just walked across the street." And so we stopped. Sure enough, it was Ross Michael. And we became friends. And he used to call me at 6:30 in the morning and because he lived in Venice, and he would call me every day about 6:30 in the morning and go, "Yo, Bridgen, I got a cornmeal porridge on the stove. Come over and bring a little eye opener." Bring a little eye opener. And I would go ride my bicycle over there with the eye opener, right? And we would sit together and reason and talk about music, talk about God. And to this day, I did Santa and Ross Michael and I did a great album together. I don't know if this one got properly released or not, if it's on iTunes. Oh, the name of it's escaping me right now. Something about love. But anyways, and then I did another album with Ross Michael, and it was most of it was just me with an acoustic guitar, and Ross Michael played all of the bingy drums and sang. And it was the album's called Ja Love, and it is not on iTunes. It's an amazing album. If you watch Ross Michael do his podcast on Instagram, almost every time, 98% of the time, he's got the Ja Love album playing in the background, which is an album that he and I made together. Santa's on a few of that songs, but for some reason, maybe he was on tour with Ziggy. I don't know what the deal was, but we did that album almost together. And I talk to Ross on an average 5 days a week to this day. And so we are very close. Shout out to Ilox, who worked and recorded with Ross. The shout outs get ridiculous right now because I just have so many brethren. I got to shout out Detour Posse, which is Zebby and Blunt and George Hughes, who plays for Ziggy. And Blunt and I are still with Barrington. Zebby's with Tribal Seeds now and Barrington sometimes. Brandon Stennett, shout out. That's Pablo, Paul Stennett's son. He plays bass for Ziggy. And Brandon is an up-and-coming drummer who is just on fire. He's ridiculous. You know, I mentioned Milton Smith earlier, Mark Tyson, you know, Ja Mark, Wadada, Brother JJ, Ojinki, may he rest in peace. You know, Shakaman. My dear, dear friend, Haile Maskel, who I've been friends since the 80s, who lives 12 minutes away from me now, and who I absolutely adore as a person and a songwriter and a singer and a bass player and a guitarist. The shout-outs could go on forever. I got to say Kevin Batchelor,
Stevie, I just have to stop you for a minute to say okay. I love Haile Maskel. He's an excellent lyricist.
Amazing, isn't he?
Excellent lyricist.
Yes, harmonies. Great with harmony.
Great with harmony, there's lyricists. The way he delivers a song. Yeah.
Chakaman too. You know, where they came, they had the band the Rastafari. With Herb Daly, he lives in the Bay now, and you know Haile Maskel, Big Dread, you know, all those guys. You know, I was always down at Shaka. Everyone used to hang out at Shaka's record shop. Mm-hmm. You know, Colored Brother Dennis, who we call Beanie. I remember the first time I met Gold Rodriguez. He looked at me and said, mm-hmm. "Brethren, you look like you just crawled out from under a rock. I like you." And, you know, I just have so many brothers, so many sisters. Sister Mashariki, I've known forever. Lady B Locks, we've become great friends. Love you.
Thank you. I love you too.
so many wonderful people have embraced me. And I know I'm leaving out dozens and dozens of great musicians and people, you know, shout out to Kingston 12, King Richard.
King Richard, rest in peace.
We used to play 12 every week back in the day. Just so many great LA musicians. I've had the pleasure and the honor to share the stage with.
And I just want to say to you, when I saw that they had you on the interview, I was so proud because even for myself, a lot of musicians, not just artists, their story is so important. And the musicians, you guys are so, so, so important. And when you said about when you start doing the music and you wasn't sure and you was gonna stop. The thing is that, like, I tell a lot of musician friends, when you're playing, people come to see the artist perform. It's not only the artist alone. They're listening to the musicians too. There's other musicians that's there that might just, they came and listened to you alone, or maybe the drummer alone. So when you're playing, not only is the story of the vocalist being heard, the right. musicians too. Right. And when you're able to match with the musicians and your story blending so good, that's when the love come and you're requested. Because everybody can do that. There's a lot of people who play and still want to do their thing with a group. You can't do your thing with a group. You have to come with the group and be on the same accord and let your natural thing fall in, and it'll find a place to shine.
Right.
And from the moment, well, from the time I've known you, no matter what the setting was, your vibe always stood out and been a part of the vibe.
Thank you.
You know that I'd be like, dang!
Oh,
at the edge of the stage. So I'm so proud that you're here and you're sharing your story, your journey. So when people can see you, they definitely understand
right.
the whole vibe of Steve. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Blessings. Yeah.
So I want to, there's a couple people I want to mention. My brother Spiro, I love dearly. Stokely, I love all you. So many musicians, you know, Duck, all so many Los Angeles musicians. I don't know if every you had to be around in the early days to know Swellele. Swellele was my dear friend, amazing Jamaican singer, songwriter. He's in Florida now. We were always just like two peas in a pod together. I got to mention Rob Allo now. And there's a great, there's a lot of great, you know, female reggae artists now, or you know, really coming up now. Miss B Royal, Cat Hall,
yeah, Miss B Royal,
ADD. You know, there's so many great female artists too that I'm really excited about. And Miss B Royal, who is, you know, from the Polynesian community, I got to mention Rob Allo, because when I was with Detour, Rob Allo brought us to J Boog. I don't know if you guys know J Boog. You know, nice to know you.
Yeah.
Do it again. I got to perform with Fiji, who is the king of all Polynesian reggae artists. You know, shout out to Marty Dread when I start thinking of Hawaii. I lived in Hawaii for 3 years, but I was with J Boog for 2 years. Then I ended up with Spawn Breezy for 2 years. We toured Australia, New Zealand, and all kind of crazy places. There was a Polynesian singer up in the Bay Area called Josh Wawa. I loved his music. And so another facet of my involvement with reggae was with the Polynesian reggae artists. And I just want to shout out to them for welcoming me as well, and allowing me to be part of their amazing music. Common Kings with Brother JR, the singer, those guys, you know, The Green, all the Polynesian reggae groups are dear to my heart as well, you know. So reggae has definitely expanded. And as Bob Marley said, this music will find its rightful place and it will find its rightful audience. So I definitely wanted to mention that part of my history, you know, as well as I got a shout out to Mikey Dread. May he rest in peace. The Midnight Dread, yes, because he was the first reggae artist that brought me to Hawaii. I had never been to Hawaii in my life, and it was Mikey Dread who brought me. Oh, shout out to Wadi Gad. In Wadi. Love you, Wadi. Dread Flintstone, another great reggae artist, funky reggae and all that stuff from back in the day, acid jazz, that's what I wanted to say. So Mikey Dread is the one that first brought me to Hawaii, and Mikey Dread, you know, I'd be sitting around the house in Venice. My house was like a landing point for a lot of artists would come over, and, you know, there'd be a knock at the door. It'd be Mikey Dread, you know, unannounced,
what happened, Stevie? You know, what are you doing? Biggie, I draw now. You know,
everybody wants to draw.
Yeah. And so, one of the Abyssinians came over one time, and, Mouse used to sleep on my couch. Eka Mouse used to sleep on my couch for weeks at a time. You know, we were great friends back in the day. And so, I just wanted to include some of these things. You know, I didn't want to leave anybody out, And, of course, Barrington Levy, who, as JenJ mentioned, we played with him, I don't know, half a dozen times in Jamaica. And I got to give it up to Mr. Levy, because those promoters had to buy us all Detour Posse tickets to go to Jamaica when Jamaica has all the musicians in the world. And they'd be like, why do you want to bring these guys from California? All great musicians here. You're costing me, a lot of money here for plane tickets. And Barrington Levy said, because they're my band. And, I don't play without them. Barrington Levy.
Know your people.
And I also want to say thank you to Mr. Levy. He's never told us what to wear on stage. He's never tried to tell us really what to play. If you make a mistake, you might get a little cuss word from him, because he takes his music dead serious. And so if you make a mistake, you will hear about it. But especially when I was younger, I was very animated on stage and used to put my locks up on top of my head like a pineapple. And and I was all over the stage and very animated and stuff. And so much so that we were at B.B. King's in Manhattan one time. And actually somebody threw a bottle at me. And I believe it was because they were like, oh, he's a sick of Red Aguan. So, a flash of himself or whatever. But the thing about that was, is that these people come up to me and say, you look bored on stage. You kind of look bored on stage. I'm like, I'm concentrating, And then, so I became more animated. And then, of course, I got criticized for being too animated. So then I tried to find a balance, right? But again, I don't know how much video there is on it, but there, Barrington Levy never told me, to calm it down or to not be so animated or whatever it was. I would always, go into my little tiger stance on stage and do all these things. Mr. Levy never, ever tried to put a blanket over me, over my creativity, never. And so I'm always grateful for him for that too, and there was some Copeland Forbes, Gregory Isaacs. I gotta say, I loved Gregory's music so much, as well as all these artists. And I was absolutely starstruck to be with Gregory for some reason, and I did the last 2 years of his life with him. We did his last show in the United States with him in New York, and then he went to England, did one more show, and sadly passed away. But I remember looking over next to me and seeing Gregory Isaacs and just going, am I dreaming? Is this a dream? Like, I just couldn't even believe that I was doing that.
It was a blessing. Our journeys are so beautiful, and always bask in the moment, because people don't understand when it comes to the reggae, like how the R&B is and they have the award ceremonies. The reggae hadn't reached that level, but you're amongst the greats.
Oh, absolutely.
I'd be so excited that I know Fully, I know Sister Nancy, and I'm like, people, y'all don't understand. If we were talking about the reggae, the R&B and all that, we're amongst the greats. They're your friends. You've been with them. You can call them. They know you. They understand you. They could tell somebody great things about you. And it's so beautiful.
Right. I mean, all of these names I'm mentioning are my family. And I know they feel the same way about me. And what a great blessing and an honor that is to work with all these talented musicians for all these years. It's just, when I think about it, sometimes I forget who I am. Am I, my girlfriend Liz, who's on here,
you know, she has to remind me sometime and go, you know, you did so much, you know.
Yeah.
As far as recordings, I didn't ever record in Jamaica. Oh, Andy Basford is a great friend of mine who did live in Jamaica and record. He played on Wailing Souls recordings and all kind of people. He was with Toots and he's a white guy. He was with Toots and Maytals. And even this whole white and black thing, you know, really and truly, we're all Africans. And we've been taught to divide ourselves up into black and white and brown. All this stupid stuff, but everyone can trace their DNA to the motherland because it was a black woman that started it all.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, Steve.
And so we are all black in that respect. Mm-hmm. We've been told that we're something different. But if you trace the roots, I think we are all of our human mankind's origins are from Africa, which is really Africa is not the right name. It's Ethiopia. The whole continent is Ethiopia. Is the Greek somebody that called it Africa? I think it was the Greeks that said they gave it that name. That's not Africa's not even an African name. Brother Victor, when I think of Africa, my dear friend Victor, who I gave guitar lessons to, he's Nigerian. Oh, he used to sit at my kitchen table.
Victor Esset?
Huh?
Esset? Victor Esset?
Agege.
Is that it?
No, not him. Victor Agege. And it's funny about Victor, we would sit at my table during guitar lessons and we would crack up laughing. We'd go, Victor, this is ridiculous. A white guy is teaching an African guy to play reggae. And we would laugh and go, this is beyond ridiculous, but let's continue with the lesson. So that was, and he's my dear brother. I love him to death. Thank you, Victor, for your immense kindness. It's just been.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
When all of these concerts that you were doing, I mean, like, what was like one of your favorite that you were actually able to enjoy too? Because you've been to a lot of concerts that people would die to have been there, even though you perform. But you know, one of the ones that you enjoyed being at the most.
Real quick, well, one of the greatest shows I ever saw was Black Uhuru with Ducky Puma and Michael Rose with Sly and Robbie backing him. And what's the engineer's name that was mixing them? Dennis Thompson was the engineer. That was one of the most amazing things I ever heard in reggae, bar none. But there's so many, that really blew my mind. And now I, you know, over the years, we are blessed as musicians that people come up and say very nice things to us sometimes and compliments. Oh, you were wicked. You know, that was amazing.
Yeah.
All these things. And that's, this is not about money. I mean, we have to earn a living and I never had another job since I was 22 years old, but so we got to earn a living. But what's the greatest compliment I ever got, and this was still going to send chills up and down my spine. We were in Italy with Barrington Levy and these Zebby, the drummer for Dieter. We were walking around looking for something to eat after we played. It was a day festival. And these young Italian people came up and they said, hey, you know, our friend wants to tell you something, but he doesn't speak any English. But we taught him what he wants to say to you. Would you mind coming over? And he's really shy, but would you mind coming over and allowing him to tell you something? And I was like, sure. So we went over to this brethren. He speaks no English, but they taught him what he wanted to say. And this man looks at me, or he was a young adult, and he looks at me and he says, your guitar sounds like freedom.
Wow.
And I almost hit the ground.
Wow.
Your guitar sounds like freedom. So that was absolutely the greatest compliment I ever received. And it was an amazing show. People were banging on this fence and going crazy. That was an amazing show. Right there, that stands out as one of the greatest shows I ever did. And the compliment that followed it was even greater than the show.
And you
were... That sounds like a name for a song.
Okay, maybe it is.
And you were with Barrington for 26 years?
Yeah, still going. Okay. Still going. We just finished a 3.5 month tour. 3.5 months on tour. And we somebody told me we did 58 shows all in the U.S. And we've toured Europe. We've toured Europe many times and gone to Hawaii and different places with Barrington. But, we just finished a really long tour and we came home safely. So that's an amazing thing. Fabian Cook was the engineer and it was great.
Do you have a preference of the type of reggae that you like to play, lovers rock or any preference, harmonies from the groups?
What a great question. So hard to answer. So hard to answer that question. I love ska and rock steady, just to get that out of the way. I love those musics. Kevin Batchelor, I mentioned earlier, when the amazing Scatolites needed a guitar player for 3 shows, they actually called me to play. And Lloyd Nibb was still alive, their drummer. And so I got to do that. Again, just an amazing thing I got to do. Because you asked that question, I loved 90s dance hall. I loved General Degree and Red Rat and Lady Saw and, on and on. And Detour, when those dance hall artists used to come to L.A., Professor Nuts, Love and Deer, Mr. Vegas, Lexus, all those guys, when they would come, they always hired Detour because we would reproduce those 90s dancehall rhythms with the exact sounds that they used. George Hughes would play those sounds and Zebby would, play his octopad and play the exact same sounds that came from those recordings. So, Shaba Ranks, we backed, and all these people, my brother Andre, keyboardist, great keyboard player. Love you, Andre. So, we also did that. The dance hall they're doing nowadays is not for me. Mm-hmm. It's not for me because I hear violence and I hear explicit sexuality that I think belongs. I mean, it's dance hall is for adults anyway, and I'm not trying to censor anybody. You sing what you want to sing, but you ask me what I like. And so that's not for me. But I love the dance hall in the reggae because in the 90s, because they did, it wasn't explicit. They would point certain things, like Lady Saw would say, "Put me on your big ninja bike." And we all knew what she meant, but she didn't have to say it. And I appreciated it. I just love those rhythms. Those rhythms were amazing back then. Liquid and Bookshelf and all those rhythms that were so amazing.
And the Panandi.
Oh, all of that, and I was with Sean Paul for 2 years, 2 full years with Sean, Sean Paul. Played his first show, I think, in America at House of Blues in Hollywood. He was nervous to go on. He's like, "You think they're going to like me? I don't think they're going to like me." We're like, "Sean, they're going to like me." And look what happened to Sean. He looked so large, and I'm so happy for his success. And he's a wonderful human being. I loved all that. I do love Lovers Rock because one of my favorites is Gregory Isaacs. But roots reggae, Abyssinians. Are you kidding me? And Heptones, Leroy Sibbles. I love the hardcore roots. All the Israel Vibration, those guys are such amazing songwriters. April Gabriel with Walk the Streets of Glory, We at the Rasta, Friday Evening. Those songs were just amazing. And then you get into the Nyabingi with Ross Michael, the Nyabingi Specialist. If you need a cleansing of the soul, you just put on Ross Michael and you will get that from his music. So I just love reggae music, and I used to love dancehall, but not so much anymore. But I love all those, all of it: ska, rock steady, Alton Ellis, Willow Tree. You know, all those amazing songs that he wrote. And I got to back Alton Ellis several times. So
those songs were the dancehall.
Say back them is really not a very Jamaican way to say that. To perform with would be a little better. The Jamaicans would say, "You never back no one. Pause, pause. You know, you don't back anybody. You know, you might have did a show with them as their guitar player, but you don't back people."
You know? Rastaman in the Rastaman language.
Okay, Rastaman.
Besides Marcia Griffiths, what female reggae artists did you get a chance to play behind?
Well, yes, Marcia was, I mean, that was another amazing experience. I backed her a few times. She really liked me, at least she definitely told me she did, and I really loved her, and that was an amazing experience. You know, trying to think, you know, it's a male-dominated genre, and it was, you know, in its golden era. I backed Don Penn a few times, and JC Lodge, and Cecile, and so, you know, I did back quite a few female
and Lady B.
Mm-hmm. Lady B, of course. Mm-hmm. Lady B, yeah. Lady B is now, you know.
Thank you.
Hey, I know Shakina.
Oh yes.
Oh yeah, I wrote a song for Shakina that she recorded, you know. Sure, I worked with Shakina. I don't know if I ever did a live show with her. I probably did, but you're going way back now, Jim J. You're going way back, you know. A funny story, Joe Higgs would never hire me because he would say, people would recommend me to Joe, and Joe would say, "Nah, me don't want Stevie. Stevie play with too much people. We want somebody that's going to just sit in with I and I and just be with I and I." So God bless Joe Higgs. That never bothered me a bit. I understood.
People hate to call and find out that you're busy, especially when they really want you.
You know, but so many artists I got to back, you know, it's just ridiculous. Frankie Paul and, you know, so many greats. Many
Frankie Paul. Frankie Paul, and, that you know, was I know I artist, meant, man.
I know I meant Leroy Sibbles. I want to shout out to Bago Walker, the great Studio One bass player. But I mentioned Leroy Sibbles, but I don't think I really said enough about how amazing of a songwriter, bass player. Some of the greatest riddims.
All arounder.
Tata Amasagana bass line, Kutchy. So, you know, so many staples of reggae music, you know.
Steve, did you do any recording out there in Jamaica for artists?
Never have. Mm-hmm. I did some good recordings with certain people. I did a whole Lestafari, and I did Black Cowboy album. That's me and Lestafari all over that. But never recorded in Jamaica, no. Which, you know, Santa will tell you, you know, if you hadn't recorded in a Jamaican studio, you know, that's a big hole. And so I am aware of that. Mm. I was very envious of Andy Bassford when I met him, because he was playing with Toots and the Maytals and the great Dennis Brown. Oh, I hadn't even said Dennis Brown's name yet. He was with Dennis Brown and We the People, Lloyd Parks. Mm-hmm. And he did live in Jamaica for many years and recorded with all of the greats.
Wow.
You know, shout out to Big Mountain, was in that group for a couple of years, the great Paul Kastick on drums, and you know, but I never did record in Jamaica. No. No.
Not yet.
I know you have a gig tonight, and we promised that we would not keep you to
Right.
Started without you. So does anybody have any other questions that they would like to ask him before he leaves? And thank you so much for sharing all your history and your time with us. It gives us another dimension of a life of a musician, because a lot of times people see them on stage, they don't know these are real people. They got lives and they have ups and downs like everybody else, but it's the music that keeps you going.
And there's not a musician out there that hasn't worked and not gotten let it be known.
Yeah, I'm just amazed at your history and who you've worked with. You know, it's just amazing. And I'm just basking in these moments, because Jinjay and Mashariki is amazing to bring this to us. We got to credit them for making this happen, because I'm just a spark plug. Well, this is amazing.
And I thank you sincerely from my heart for doing this, because I've only been interviewed once before in my entire life in Bermuda. There's a radio station in Bermuda. I did a pretty short interview over there. Thank you, Liz, for orchestrating that for me, my girl. And so this is this, but I've never spoken at length ever to anyone in an interview situation that will go on the internet and outlive me. And so it's a great joy and a great honor to be able to share what I did, because I mean, come on, I'm impressed with what I did. I can't I can't even believe what I did and how much of it I did. You know, it's ridiculous. I backed well over, or performed with well over 150 famous Jamaican artists, you know.
Like I said before, Steve, how we...
It's called Sugar Mine, its name too, you know. And I've been so blessed to work with so many great, talented people.
Steve, like I said before, I was excited about you being on here. And I just want to share with you, like, over the years of seeing you do your work, the times are I'm watching TV, like my TV's right behind, and I see concerts, like it was this one big old concert, and they zoomed in past Blunt and you, and I'm just like, those are my friends. So excited.
Because
I know you guys are so far away.
We are family.
You guys are so far away, and I'm like, you're working, you're getting paid too, because they ain't gonna take you over there and don't pay you, and you're doing what you love.
And when I said there isn't a musician out there that hasn't been paid, you know, 95% of the time I do get paid, but I'm just saying there's, you know, especially the pioneers and the architects of this music, like Soul Syndicate and so many other musicians that paved the way for me and allowed me to play with them, and are out there tonight, you know, that I'm going to do this show with, you know, were ripped off, not for thousands, but maybe in the millions of dollars. And it's absolutely a tragedy. Shout out to scientists. Scientists called me, and I actually played on a song for Paul McCartney. That he was producing, that was surreal. That was an amazing experience. So shout out to scientists for thinking of me. The longer I sit here, the more I think about, you know.
Just know you ain't doing nothing wrong. You never did. And your surroundings and your walk, it showed you that. Every call you get is another confirmation of, I'm all right when I'm doing my thing.
Yeah. Alice in Wonderland, reggae bass player, female reggae bass player doing the thing, you know. I love seeing that. Sister Kip, who I played with. It was Kip who hired me to back Israel Vibration at the Ford Theater in Hollywood. Shout out to Sister Kip for doing that for me, you know, to call me for such an amazing experience. You know, so, you know, it's just so much history, and so many shows and so much so much love.
Stevie, did you ever play with
Methuselah?
Methuselah.
Oh, of course. Me and Methuselah were great friends. I used to eat at his mom's restaurant right there. From Juicy. I used to get the stew canoe, the stew peas with the corn thing in it. Oh yeah, I was great friends with Methuselah. And his name is just fleeting. The great Belizean sax player.
You're talking about Majeli.
Majeli. Majeli.
Rest in peace, Majeli.
Oh, he was such a beautiful soul. I don't know if he's still with us or not.
He's gone. Rest in peace.
He's gone. Rest in peace. I've been blessed to work with so many. You know, Brother Roots, man, we used to rehearse at Roots, man, right around the corner from Juicy, you know.
Juicy, yeah, that studio.
Rest in peace. Roots, legendary. Man, is a beautiful person. I tell Joe, couldn't have done it without you. Holly Maskell, you know. These people are my brothers and my mentors, and Fabian Cook, Sandra Davis.
Set the pace for bread California and reggae.
Yeah.
You know, all of them, bread and pipe, you know, all of them, you know, all of them.
Set the pace.
Stevie, I thank you for doing this interview. I've heard some of your stories before. And I love hearing them again. And I want to remind you how significant your contribution is to this music overall and the whole scene. Your contribution is significant and powerful. And it sounds like freedom, right? Just like your guitar, I think about that. And I'm so proud of you for doing this and taking time out and sharing your story. It's really important.
Thank you. So much love to everyone. Because at the end of the day, in my view, we were put on this earth to love each other and to learn how to love each other. And so if we can do that, we are good human beings.
Yeah. What did Ziggy say? Love is the only law to obey.
Right. There you go. Brother Ziggy, I had the amazing experience to see Ziggy and Burning Spear the other night. It totally blew my mind, by the way.
Whoa.
Great. So great. Whoa. Burning Spear. There are no words to describe Burning Spear, you know. And Champion. And again, I mentioned Big Youth, but Big Youth to me is a musical genius who is about 2,500 years ahead of his time. And I backed Uroy several times. I was so honored to back the great innovator of rap music, great Uroy. Okay. Just amazing.
Yes. You know, well, Bob said reggae music will find its right people, but Peter Tosh said reggae my lightest. That's what I got. I caught it. I caught the reggae vibe. That's it.
Me too. Me too. And I'm going to go perform with Ginger Roots, who is a great upcoming young artist. And I wish him nothing but success in this world, you know. And I'm really proud of him too. So I'm honored to share the stage once again with the great Santa Davis, Fully Bullwood, Michael Hyde, Ginger Root. Yes, indeed.
And so
keep doing your thing. Have a great show, man.
Thank you so much again. And because we had technical difficulties with the music, we have to have you come back just so that we
there
can
you go.
Music with who you play with, so we can.
I would be honored. Lizzie, I love you if you're there.
Yes, I am still here. I love you too.
Okay.
That is beautiful.
Thank you, everyone.
Appreciate you.
Blessings. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you for being part of my dream.
Aww.
We love you.
We love you, Stevie.
We love you.
Okay. Yes,
excellent. Excellent, folks. Thanks everybody for coming. We're gonna keep doing this until we ain't gonna do it, and then we can pass it on to somebody else. All right, folks.
Thank you, Stevie.
The last three words I want to say is forward, one love.
Yes.
Blessings.
Aww.
This is being recorded, so you can tune back in later to see.
To see how dumb I look.
No, man. Nope. You always look sharp to me. I always look sharp. You always had your vibe together. Know that.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve.
Yes.
Right. Thanks, good folks.
Bye, you guys.
Thanks for attending, everybody. We will do this again very soon. Thank you.
Okay, I look forward to the Santa and Fully interviews as well, and whoever else you do. I got to go back and watch Tony Chin and Les Safari and Barbara Barabinos now.
Okay.
And Margell, too.
Appreciate it.
All right, thank you again.
Nice. All right, have a great evening.
I realize.